Yo, 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 New York Rangers fans, what is up? And welcome to episode 51 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we are back. We are moving now towards 100, which is the next milestone and goal that we're aiming for. I appreciate everybody who listened last week. Got a lot of really cool feedback, especially on the interview with Kevin Lowe, which was good to see. This week, I think we have another interview for you guys you're going to really enjoy, and that would be Will Cooley, who has emerged now as one of the top prospects in the New York Rangers organization, no doubt about it. We talked a lot early on in September before training camp started for the Rangers about what an impact Cooley had made at development camp and how he really had lifted his stock within the organization and had become a viable guy who could maybe make a pitch to make the team as soon as next season. He's off to a tremendous start in the OHL this year. He said that one of his goals was to become one of the best players in that league this season, and he's well on his way to doing it, averaging over a point per game. I think he's got 15 goals in like 19 games, so he's really putting the puck in the back of the net, but also playing an all-around game and being that big physical presence that we know he can be. So Cooley is definitely a guy that you guys should be excited about, and we're going to hear from him in just a little bit. But let's start with the latest surrounding the New York Rangers, and they've only played twice since we last spoke. Their game on Sunday against the Islanders was postponed with the Islanders going through this ongoing COVID outbreak. And, you know, there's a lot of reminders around the league right now, and not just the NHL, but all leagues, that COVID is still here. It is still something that we have to be conscious of. It is still something that we can't take lightly, and it could alter our plans, alter the schedule at any point. The Hartford Wolfpack, the Rangers minor league affiliate in the American Hockey League, is dealing with an outbreak themselves right now. I reached out to a source up there, and I was told it's multiple players. I've seen reports that it's over 10 players, so could be a pretty serious situation with Hartford right now. And the Rangers themselves have one player out, Greg McKay, who is an extra forward, and it's been a couple days. He's been the only guy that's tested positive for them so far this week. They seem to feel pretty confident that they're out of the woods, for now at least, and that they do have enough guys to play and put a full lineup out there for this Wednesday game against the Flyers. But when we see what's going on with the Islanders, when we see what's going on with the Senators, and now we see what's going on with the Wolfpack, this stuff is still here. So unfortunately, this is something that we still have to be very conscious of and remains an ongoing concern. The Rangers did get to play the Islanders once last week. I made the trip out to UBS Arena, which is beautiful, by the way. I was really impressed with it. Really cool from the outside, really cool on the inside. Definitely a much different feel from my trips to the Coliseum, the former home of the Islanders, of course. The storied, kind of gross, kind of gritty, ugly in a lot of ways, but also had a lot of charm to it. So I made my first trip to UBS Arena last Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, by the way. It was definitely a nice day for me, but then a lot of moving around at the same time because Wednesday night I was out on Long Island until late. It was a 7:30 puck drop against the Islanders that night. Then have Thanksgiving, running around, seeing a bunch of family. Friday morning, I'm then up at 6 a.m. to get in the car and drive to Boston. I'll tell you guys a little bit about that drive in just a minute. But the Rangers do take care of business against the Islanders on Wednesday. Obviously, a depleted lineup for the Islanders. They had seven guys out with COVID, a couple other guys who were injured. So it was a game that you absolutely expected the Rangers to win, but they really took care of business, and there was a lot of positive signs for them in that game. Then, after celebrating Thanksgiving, the team makes the trip up to Boston. And that, to me, was one of their most impressive games of the year. I actually, that morning, around 6 a.m., woke up, 7 a.m., jumped in the car with Colin Stevenson, friend of the podcast. You guys know him from Newsday. We drove up together, which the drive up there was fine, really smooth. The drive home, we hit some snow, some slippery roads, got stuck behind some plow trucks. It was really an interesting ride home. We ended up getting home a lot later than we expected, but we did get home safe, which is the most important thing. But the Rangers, they had a lot to feel good about on their trip home, which I know was on a plane, not in a car. And they were able to not only go up to Boston and get a win, but close out that game incredibly strongly. They outscored a bona fide playoff team in the Bruins 3-0 in the third period, really put their foot down, really put their foot on their throat, and finished that game in an encouraging fashion. And now they just keep stacking these wins. 7 out of their last 8 in total. Their record stands at 13-4-3 as we sit here at the quarter point of the season. It is really above and beyond, I think, what a lot of us anticipated, even in a best-case scenario. I told you guys in the preseason that I thought the Rangers could sneak into the playoffs this season. I did think that that was a realistic goal. But right now, they're not only looking like they're going to sneak into the playoffs, they are right up there at near the top of the division. Of course, Carolina and Washington are also playing really well. The Metro Division is very top-heavy looking right now. The Islanders have fallen deep into the basement. We thought that they would be one of the top teams, but the Caps, the Hurricanes, and the Rangers are all playing really well right now. The Rangers, I think, the big talking point for me, at least, heading into that Islanders game and then it carried over into the Bruins game, is the tweaks that they made with their lineup. Despite all the wins, we know that there had been quite a few lineup changes. There's been injuries. Obviously, Sammy Blais going out was a big deal for them. But the Rangers, right before that Islanders game, even though they had won a lot in the recent games before that, still decided to make a switch. And that really stood out to me, because whether it was David Quinn, or you can look at a lot of other teams and a lot of other coaches around the league, I don't know if it's superstitious or whatever you want to call it, but generally speaking, coaches are very reluctant to make lineup changes when things are going well. Gallant, I thought, really showed some guts, rolled the dice, and decided to follow what I've been told by a couple different people in the organization was something that they had been talking about for a little while, and try something out that they thought, as Gallant said to me, would help the team get to another level. And what that was at this point last week when we spoke on the program, we were talking about Dryden Hunt moving up and playing with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. That didn't seem like a great fit. You kind of wondered if that would work or not. Meanwhile, at the same time, the Rangers had Artemi Panarin, Ryan Strome, and Kaapo Kakko, who were rolling. We talked last week about how that had been the Rangers' best line so far this season. So Gallant goes out there and breaks up what has clearly been his best line so far this season, obviously raised a lot of eyebrows in doing so. But here's why the Rangers like it, and here's why I think it makes sense and could end up being a good move for them and working out for them, at least for the time being. They basically swapped Kakko and Hunt. So they put Kakko up on the top line with Mika and Kreider, and they put Hunt on the line with Panarin and Strome. The Rangers, I'm told, like Kakko, in a lot of ways they're trying to achieve sort of what they had previously, so I'm sure some people will take issue with that, but the Rangers like Kakko in that Buchnevich line. We know that Pavel Buchnevich, before he was traded to St. Louis, spent a whole lot of time on that top line with Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad. They had great chemistry. That was the Rangers' most effective line in a lot of ways in the last couple of years, although the Panarin-Strome line has also been really good. But in Kakko, they see some Buchnevich-like skills. He's strong on pucks. They believe that he's the kind of guy who can hold a puck, be a playmaker, see the ice well, and make the right passes to set up what in Kreider and Zibanejad are two high-level goal scorers. Kreider's been absolutely on fire. He's got 15 goals through the first 20 games, ranks right up near the top of the league leaderboard as far as goal scoring is concerned. And Mika, we all know what he's capable of. We've seen him get really hot and score goals in bunches a few times in the last few years. He's one of the best scoring centers in the league. So you've got Kreider, who we know excels, especially at the net front. You've got Mika, who we know when he's going well is really good at getting to the slot, is really good at using his wicked shot from both circles. Mika's just an all-around goal scorer. And then Kakko is a guy who they think can play a little bit more on the outside, can hold pucks, can draw defenders, and then can make the right passes and find those guys in the right situation. So that's why they like him on the top line with Mika and Kreider. Moving on to Hunt. In Hunt, you see what I said to Ryan Strome, and he agreed with me. He said it's a fair comparison. You see shades of Jesper Fast. And you guys know we've talked about the impact that Fast had on Strome and Panarin in that 1920 season, which is when Panarin was a Hart Trophy candidate, Strome had his breakout year, and the Rangers loved what they got out of that line that season. Fast was there to do the dirty work. He was a guy who had some speed. He could use that speed to be pesky and aggressive on the forecheck, which is what the Rangers like a lot about Dryden Hunt's game. They also feel Hunt can be a responsible presence defensively for them. They feel that he's a guy who can get to the net, get to those dirty areas, and allow Strome and Panarin to work on the outside, sort of create space for them in that way. And he's also a guy that when there does come a situation where there is a loose puck, a puck battle, or you have to even dump a puck behind the opposing team's net, that Hunt is the guy who clearly is not scared to be physical, will stick his nose right in there, and can retrieve pucks and then send it back out to Panarin and Strome and let them do their thing and make their plays. So that's why the Rangers really like Hunt in that role. And that's why when you think about it from those from that perspective, when you think about all the things that I just laid out about how Kako's game fits with Mika and Kreider and how Hunt's game fits with Panarin and Strome, that's why Gallant wanted to make the switch. And that's why I think it is a worthwhile thing to try for a while. And I do think you're going to see it for at least a stretch of games coming up, especially if the Rangers keep winning. Moving on down the line, that third line, the kid line, whatever we want to call it, we got to come up with a better nickname for that. I asked you guys for some suggestions. I haven't seen anything good enough to stick yet. So let me know if you come up with something better. But you've got the French connection in Lafreniere and Julien Gauthier on the outside, and you've got Philip Hedel on the inside. I actually spoke to Alexis Lafreniere about this today. He was saying that when it's just him and Gauthier speaking, they speak in French. But when Hedel's involved, they speak in English because that's the one common language that all three of them know. So that I thought was a pretty funny tidbit. But they really seem to be feeling comfortable with each other. Gauthier told me the other day that it's gotten to the point where because they know they're playing together, they're doing a lot more communicating, whether it's in practice or looking at video and sort of coming up with plays and coming up with concepts and coming up with ideas of how they can attack the opponent. And those guys have contributed some points and some goals recently for sure. Gauthier in particular has been really good. He had two primary assists in the Boston game, both in the third period, both big goals, one of them to set up Lafreniere. And what you really liked about that situation with Gauthier was we've seen him crash the net a lot, and whether he gets tripped up, falls, kind of just comes in too hard and can't really get a quality shot off, he almost seemed to be too much of a one-trick pony in those situations. What I thought was encouraging and what some people who I've spoken with thought was encouraging was that when you saw him in that Boston game, he was attacking the net with his head up. And when there was an open guy streaking down on the weak side, open for a pass, open for a backdoor kind of goal, which is what we saw with Lafreniere, Gauthier had the wherewithal to make that pass. So that is a sign of maturity, a sign of progress for him for sure. And when you look at the overall chances that that line is generating, this was striking. Some of you probably saw on Monday morning, I had a story come out that listed 20 stats that have stood out to me through the Rangers' first 20 games. And one of them that I listed in there was that line with Lafreniere, Hedel, and Gauthier ranks fifth among all NHL lines that have logged at least 50 minutes together at even strength in terms of expected goals for percentage. And when you look at expected goals for per 60, they rank first. So that goes to show you that the quality of the chances that that line is generating have been right up near the top of the league, which is a great reason for the Rangers to keep them together and see if they can keep riding this momentum. And then, of course, the fourth line also has been playing its role very, very well. They were the standouts in that win over the Islanders on Wednesday. Ryan Reeves had a couple of assists, including one where he showed hands, that I didn't think that he had, where he was able to set up Kevin Rooney for a goal. It was really overall, I thought, maybe the best game that line had together. And we spoke last week about Barclay Gaudreau moving down to play center on that line with Rooney and Reeves on the wing, and how that had the look of a formidable fourth line that could do a lot of the dirty work that Gerard Gallant wants them to do. And overall, when you look at the balance now of these four lines, you got to feel pretty good about the way the Rangers are rolling. The wins are stacking up. The numbers are way up in their last seven games, both in terms of the actual goals that they're generating versus what they're allowing and the expected goals that they're generating versus what they're allowing. They went from the bottom of the league in the first 13 games in those categories to right up near the top right now. So a lot of things going well for the Rangers. What you're seeing right now, and of course there's a long way to go, 20 games down, 62 to go, but what you're seeing right now is that the Chris Drury plan, which has definitely had its fair share of criticism, is working. This balance of skill and grit that he really wanted to go out and achieve this offseason, right now, the pieces are falling into place, the roles are clearly defined, and the Rangers are winning. It's not just Shesterkin anymore. It was, for sure, especially in those first 10 to 13 games, but the last seven games or so, the Rangers have really turned things around and are playing well, and you also have to give Gerard Gallant some credit for that. He has effectively got the team to buy into the style that he wants them to play. That straight-ahead, simple style that we've talked about before. It took them a little time, and we know that David Quinn tried his darndest to get them to do that as well. They finally seem to be buying in. Whether they can sustain it, whether they can keep it up, we're going to find out. They have a grueling stretch of games coming up right now. I looked at the schedule starting on Wednesday when the Rangers host the Flyers at MSG. They're going to play 10 games in a span of 17 days. So it's going to be a lot of running around for me and a lot of hockey for the Rangers. I'm sure you guys will enjoy it for sure, being home and getting to watch all those games most nights. But they're going to continue to be tested. So can they maintain this? Can this lineup that we're talking about working so well keep it up? Can they continue to improve in all of these different areas and not ask their goaltender to stand on his head every single night? Right now, the signs are really encouraging. Again, long way to go. I am not, by any stretch, making any bold predictions or guarantees, but right now, the Rangers look like a playoff team. It looks like they're ready to take that step. It looks like everything that they wanted to achieve this offseason and the way that they talked about playing and balancing out their lineup, right now, you got to feel really good about it because it's been working. All right. With that, we are going to move on to our interview with Will Cooley. And then after that, I will be back to answer some of your Twitter questions. Now let's welcome into the show a guy that Rangers fans are starting to get familiar with. I know they were excited to hear a lot about him during development camp. He's having a great season in the OHL with the Windsor Spitfires. That's the captain of the team, Will Cooley. So, Will, thanks for joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
No, of course. I'm glad you're able to carve out a little time. Hopefully we didn't interrupt your dinner up there, but I definitely appreciate you coming on the show. And one of the reasons I want to reach out and have you on is because I mentioned to you, I've been seeing some highlights of you popping up all over Twitter. I've been looking at your stats quite a bit. I know 20 points through 19 games, 15 goals. So give us an idea of how it's going. How do you assess your season so far? Because when you look at the highlights and you look at the points, it looks like it's going pretty well.
Yeah, I think like you said, I've had a couple of nice highlights and stuff. And, you know, I've just been trying to bring back a lot of what I learned from New York there at camp and sort of get off to like a hot start to the season. So I think I've done a decent job at that. And it's been nice to score a few goals.
You mentioned take what you learned from New York back with you. Can you give us some specific, like what did you take away from that experience that you felt like maybe will help accelerate your development?
I think nothing like no particular like skill, just more. Well, obviously I learned particular skills, but like the thing I sort of tried to bring back was just like the attitude and like the mentality of like coming to perform every day and like working hard in practice, like bring the same effort in practice every day. And just really not taking anything for granted, like seeing how well prepared those guys are and you know, like what they do off the ice in the gym and stuff, just sort of bringing that back to the junior level.
Was that something that you, especially when you got to spend time, because you got quite a bit of time with the NHL guys, was that something you felt yourself really trying to absorb and observe while you were there with them?
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously there's lots of veteran guys with the Rangers and just being able to like watch their day to day, you know, sort of habits and activities just sort of showed me like I got obviously to experience that in the NHL, but I think at the next level, it's just even a bit better. And just experiencing it from, you know, guys you sort of grow up watching, it was pretty cool.
I imagine it was pretty cool hanging around with those guys. Did anybody, you know, jump out to you or take a special interest in you, kind of take you under your wing, anything like that?
I tried to, you know, talk to not anyone in particular, just sort of be around everyone in the group and just sort of like take it all in. I talked to Morgan Barron a lot because obviously I played the last year in the AHL with him, so I knew him. But I just sort of tried to absorb like the general population.
Barron, you mentioned as a guy, he's still, you know, scratching and clawing, trying to fight his way and carve out a role in the league. When you see a guy like that, a few years older than you, obviously, is that something that you take a lot from too? Because you kind of see the work ethic and then the constant striving that you need to have to get yourself to that next level.
Yeah, definitely. I think like he was someone that I looked up to a lot last year with Hartford. Obviously a great work ethic and attitude and just good habits off the ice, and like a great guy as well. So yeah, I sort of follow him a bit like kind of closely and try to keep up with him. But he's someone that I definitely look up to.
One thing that stood out to me during development camp was that you were really physically, you seemed to be ahead of a lot of the guys that were there. You seemed to be able to, you know, throw your weight around and retrieve pucks and get to the front of the net and do some of those things that we know the guys that get to the pro level, you know, do well, especially for the Rangers. They tried to add some guys that bring those elements to their game. Once you got to NHL camp, I'm sure you found it a little more difficult to do some of those things. Like, what did you find was the difference between the physicality playing with prospects versus playing with NHL guys?
Yeah, I think just the size and the speed. Obviously, like you said, guys are a lot stronger and like faster. So I think just bigger guys being able to, like, I found I'd had to like be more focused on like getting position than just like more like brute strength, which you can kind of do against smaller guys. But I feel like if there's like a bigger guy, you got to sort of be smart about it, like attack like a certain angle kind of way to, you know, get inside him or something. So it was a bit of an adjustment, but like guys are just as strong as the AHL, I find. So it was obviously an adjustment from like rookie camp to main camp, but I think I adapted pretty quickly.
That's something that when you were drafted, a lot of people talked about, but has that always been a part of your game, or is that something that you've sort of worked more to incorporate over the years? And then how much of that physical side of the game, how much do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I think like I started really like focusing on being physical like my second half of my draft year. Like I sort of had a slow start to my draft year, like in terms of like scoring wise and getting points. So I just sort of tried to like expand my game a bit more. Like I always sort of like hit and stuff before that, but it was never really like a staple of my game. So I try to make it like, trying to make it like part of my identity now. So I found like that kind of helped in terms of like molding me into the player I am now. And I enjoy being physical and stuff. Like it's like, I feel like it's a pretty good way to play. Gets you into the game, I find also. So that's a good thing too.
And is it something that there are nuances to? Like people that watch might just think, okay, you know, this guy throws a lot of hits, but, you know, picking your spots, figuring out the right way to do it and the right times to do it, is that something that you feel like you continue to observe and grow with, and something that I'm sure you learned when you were at Rangers camp?
Yeah. Like it's obviously like you're constantly learning and like figuring yourself out, and like the game is always changing and stuff too. So obviously like throwing a hit, like maybe jumping out of position, you're able to do it in the OHL, but you can't do it in like a different league, for example, the AHL or the NHL, just because like the play moves up ice a lot quicker. So like that sort of goes with like the learning curve of like getting to the next level. And I think just like continually learning about like yourself and like how much you can hit in the game, you know, not wearing yourself out and picking your spots kind of thing.
At what point during your stint with the Rangers in September did you start to realize that you were making a good impression? Because obviously you hung around. I think you hung around more than any other forward prospect who wasn't, you know, going to stay with the team or go to the AHL or anything like that. So did you start to sense like, okay, I'm doing a lot of things that I need to do right to get noticed during that camp?
Yeah, I think the two rookie games against Philly, I thought I played well and left a good impression. And I thought I played well and, you know, did lots of the right things. So yeah, I felt like that was like a point where I was like, okay, those are two pretty good games.
Now, moving forward, did this whole experience, did that, whether it's give you confidence or help you learn stuff that you need to do to get yourself to the next level? And did it make it feel like more of an attainable goal to maybe make the jump as soon as next season?
Yeah, I feel like it definitely gave me a lot of confidence, especially coming back here. Like being up there for so, like I was there, like I think around a month. So that's a long time. So it gave me like lots of confidence. And yeah, it definitely, like, it's in my head that, like, obviously I have to focus on this year and stuff, but obviously, like, it's in my head sometimes about next year and the future, and it'll just sort of give me like a bit more to like focus towards, and sort of like crosses your mind that, yeah, it's a lot closer than like you think you are to making the team and stuff. So that'll be something that obviously the goal will be next year, and I'll be focusing on in the summer.
You find yourself watching the team a lot or following them closely?
Yeah, when I can, when I have like a night off and they're playing, usually during the week, I try to watch the games. Yeah.
So let's get to the OHL stuff though, because obviously you're there now. It looks like you're having a good time and you're obviously having a good season. The first thing I want to ask you about, because this was popping up everywhere, we've got to talk about the game where you went head to head with Brennan Hoffman and you both got hat tricks. So, I mean, just in general, how cool was that?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. We were actually roommates together at Rangers camp too, so I got to know him pretty well. But yeah, it was pretty cool. He got his hat trick pretty early in the game, like almost like 5 minutes into the second period. So I was playing like catch up a bit, but it felt even better like coming back. And like I got the first goal in the third period, which kind of started we were down 3 goals. And then I got the first one like a couple minutes into the third period, which started a comeback, and we beat them in the shootout.
So were you and Brennan jawing at each other during the game? Did you talk after the game? Like, were you having some fun with that?
Yeah, we talked after the game. But, yeah, during the game, I think he had a pretty good hit on me in the corner. And, like, I think I had a good hit on him too. But, yeah, we both got a roughing penalty against the both of us, which was a bit of a soft call, but still, like, No friends on the ice. So we're both just battling pretty hard, but kind of shows like what kind of players we are, I guess.
So you both got called for a roughing penalty while trying to hit the other guy?
Yeah, we were roughing each other, I guess. So we got 2 minutes each.
You and him both had really good camps, I thought. You both obviously hung around for a while with the NHL team. How cool was that? And you said you were roommates. So was that a little bit of a relationship formed? And did you come away impressed with his game and some of the things that he brings to the table?
Yeah, well, I actually, he's from Toronto too. Well, he played in like the GTHL, which is a Toronto league. So you're younger. So I like know about him and like what kind of player he is. Like, so I was already kind of like impressed. Like I knew what to expect from him. So he lived up to like the expectation of what I expected. So he's a really good player, obviously. And yeah, we got to like, I never really met and knew him super personally before. So yeah, throughout the camp, I got to meet him more and more and like get to know him a bit more personally.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about with Windsor, with your OHL team that I thought was pretty cool, is I saw you were named captain of the team. So just, can you tell me a bit about what that means to you and how have you embraced that role? Is that sort of making you come out of your shell a little bit more as a leader?
Yeah, I think, well, obviously it was a huge deal to me to be named captain. It was pretty something like you always kind of dream about, especially in the OHL. Like if you're from Ontario, like everyone kind of knows the OHL here and it's a pretty big deal. But yeah, it was a pretty humbling experience. And yeah, I've sort of like, it's just like same thing like we talked about before, like continually learning and stuff and making changes, and I just didn't try to change too much, just kind of being myself, and you know, that's what got me to be the captain, so I just kind of stick with what I know.
So before I let you go, I want to just go through some rapid fire stuff and have a little fun, maybe learn a little bit about your background in the process. the first thing I want to find out is just your what got you started in hockey in the first place. Did you have a big influence, somebody who really pushed you to do it, or was it something that you just were interested in on your own? You know, how did you really grow to love the game?
Yeah, it was, but I wasn't really pushed to do it at all. My family was skiers, so we skied all the way up until like 8 years old. And then most of my friends played hockey at school, so I wanted to try it. And then my parents were never really like hardcore parents. They sort of just let me do what I wanted to do. And I said I wanted to try hockey. So they obviously supported me throughout that.
What's the coolest thing to this point that you've ever done involving the game, whether it was a game you played in, a game you attended, something where you got to meet somebody cool? Like what jumps out in your mind when you think about your hockey experiences?
I think something I always remember was winning game 7 in overtime in Bantam. So would have been probably 15. And it was to win the Toronto League to go to the Ontario Championship. So I scored the game 7 overtime winner, which was pretty cool. And I think that was like my first ever overtime goal. And it was pretty like big stage, I guess. So that was pretty cool.
And I think any game 7, especially in overtime, a game winning goal in a game 7 is pretty cool, I think, at any level.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So growing up, did you have a favorite team?
Not really, other than Toronto. Like, just because I'm from Toronto, like, that's the team I watch the most. Like, most Toronto people would say the same thing. Like, it's a pretty big hockey city, so everyone kind of watches the Leafs there.
Yeah, for sure. Did you get to go to a decent amount of games?
Not really. I actually went to a lot of Marley's games. Like, my dad's friend had season tickets, so we would go to a lot of Marley's games more because, yeah, just closer to my house and whatnot.
Do you have a favorite NHL player, either now or a guy that you looked up to when you were growing up?
When I was a lot younger, I think it was Joe Thornton was my favorite player when I was like probably like 10 years old. I don't really know why. I think I like the Sharks a bit too, going back to that other question. But yeah, so I'd say Joe Thornton. And then now, the past few years, it was like Jamie Benn, obviously a big power forward, as I started to like grow my game a bit. So kind of switched to that.
You're moving off the Tom Wilson stuff a little bit after everything that's going on with him and the Rangers.
Yeah. Yeah, he was obviously a good player to watch too, like big and physical, but yeah.
Yeah, not the most popular guy for Rangers fans. So it's probably a smart move there. When you got to see a lot of the Rangers guys up close during camp, did anybody, I mean, who kind of wowed you the most? Which guy did you think was the most fun to see up close when you were on the ice with them in training camp?
I thought Panarin was just like his goal scoring ability was pretty impressive. Like in practice, almost like every shot he took like would go in. So that was pretty cool to watch.
You have to pinch yourself being around some of those guys? Is it kind of weird?
not really. Like, most of the guys I train with in the summer, train with, like, mostly NHL guys. So, kind of, like, used to the environment and stuff. But it's still pretty cool to, like, meet new ones. Like, I've never met any of them before. So, it was cool to meet new faces.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you also, because I've seen him do this with a handful of players, and we know his reputation and we know you're a guy who plays physical and isn't afraid to drop the gloves. Did you get any fighting lessons from Reeves?
No, I didn't get any from him, though.
No, he's like, he give you any pointers? Because I've seen him do it with a handful of guys. I know Lafreniere was joking the other day about talking to him about it.
No, none from him.
Okay, all right. So if you're not at the rink, maybe some of your favorite things to do with your free time, like are you a hockey all the time guy, or is there other stuff that you enjoy doing in your free time?
No, yeah, I like to do quite a few things. I don't know. I've started going on like walks lately. I never really went on walks before, but now I like to go on walks, kind of relaxing and stuff. But I started playing the guitar during COVID a bit, but I've kind of stopped. And yeah, that's about it. I'm not a big video game guy or anything like that, so just sort of like to relax.
Are you a big music guy?
I like music, like listening to music, But yeah, like I don't like I play a bit of guitar, but I actually played piano too when I was younger, but that's that dream is long gone.
Kreider plays a little bit of piano, so maybe you guys can pick it back up when you get back to New York.
Yeah.
So last thing, everybody who comes on this podcast has to tell me, and it's I'm a big food guy. What's your favorite food? Like if you're craving something, whether it's after a game or whatever, what's your go-to?
Oh, I like Osso Buco.
Oh, nice, nice. There's some good places in New York City to get that.
Good.
I'll try them. All right. All right. Well, I appreciate it so much. I'll let you go because I know you got a busy schedule, but thanks a lot for coming on. We'll be keeping an eye on you and keeping up with you, and good luck with everything the rest of the season.
All right. No problem. Thank you.
Welcome back to the third segment of the New Ice City podcast, and big thanks to Will Cooley for taking the time to come on the show. He had just gotten out of dinner somewhere in Canada, wherever they are for their upcoming game in Windsor, maybe in Windsor, I think. But he was sitting in the car, called me from the on Zoom on his phone. He's like, "Is this okay?" I was like, "It's fine with me if it's okay with you." But anyway, really appreciate his time. I know he's been running around a lot recently, as all of these players do during the season, and I especially liked hearing from him about his interactions with Brennan Othman, who we found out was his roommate during his time here for development camp. And that game, if you haven't had a chance to go see the highlights, really cool how him and Othman were going back and forth, not just with each one of them getting a hat trick, but as Will told you guys, they also went after each other with some hits, got called for a couple penalties against each other, definitely seemed to be challenging each other and having some fun with that matchup. And if you look right now at the way Cooley is playing in the OHL as one of the best forwards in that league, the way that Othman is playing in the OHL as one of the best forwards in that league, and another young forward to keep your eye on, another guy that made it into our top 10 when I ranked the prospects in the preseason, is Brett Berard, who's playing in the NCAA for Providence, having another outstanding year. He's a guy that I think when you look at those three, that is the future for the Rangers wing prospects. I think those guys, especially now that Vitali Kratsov's future is very much in doubt here, I think those are the guys that you look to as sort of that next wave of prospect. And those are three guys that the Rangers are really excited about. And I, of course, was excited to have Will on the show. I have a feeling at some point during the season, you may hear from a couple of those other guys on the show as well. Little teaser for you there. And with that, we will move on to your Twitter questions. And we're going to stick with the prospects theme for this one. Our first question comes from at MaxJL21, who wrote, "With Zach Jones being -1 and Braden Schneider being +10, doesn't that almost give Schneider an edge over Jones? I understand Jones is, quote, better, but if we want to insert someone in Nemeth's role, I feel Schneider would make more sense." Well, Max, I'll agree with you from this standpoint that if you were going to replace Patrick Nemeth, I think Braden Schneider is a better fit than Zach Jones, because if you're taking Nemeth out of the lineup, presumably, and keeping Nils Lundqvist in the lineup, we've talked about this before. I cannot envision any scenario where the Rangers would have Lundqvist and Jones on the same pair. Those are two guys that are puck movers, that are point producers, that are quote-unquote skilled offensive defensemen, and I do not think that that makes for a good matchup. They're both undersized. They both have question marks about their defensive ability at the highest level, and I just can't see any scenario where the Rangers would think it was a good idea to put those two together, even if they are right now the two best or the two most advanced of the Rangers defenseman prospects. So I can't tell you that I could see any scenario where Jones and Lundqvist were on the same pair. So if you were going to take Nemeth out, I agree with you, Schneider fits that profile better. He's more of a defensive presence. He's a bigger guy, a more physical guy. I know the Rangers have been really happy with his defensive play with Hartford. So I would agree with you if that's the way you're looking at it, that Schneider would be a more likely guy in that situation. But with all of that said, I don't think that's what the Rangers are planning on doing. I do not think Patrick Nemeth is at risk of losing his spot in the lineup. If you look at the way that the Rangers have played it so far, you look at the decisions that Gerard Gallant has made involving his decor, it hasn't been Nemeth that's been a scratch when he wants to take guys out. It's been Nils Lundqvist, which leads me right into a story that I wrote today on Tuesday that will be online for you guys by the time you hear this podcast on Wednesday. And that is, I had a chance to talk to Nils Lundqvist on Tuesday and get a feel for where his head is at as he's dealing with some of these rookie struggles. It has not been an overwhelming or really standout rookie season for him so far. We've seen him be scratched 5 times now. The Rangers have played 20 games. He's been in 15 of them. And in the games that he has played, it's not, I don't want to portray this as he's been making glaring mistakes or he's been an eyesore or he's been a liability for them necessarily, but his game also hasn't popped yet. We have not seen the skill bubble to the surface that we heard so much about when he was putting up big numbers in the SHL all those years. The Rangers are being patient with him. And especially right now with all the stuff going on with Hartford, they really don't have any other options for call-ups. It could be a while before they're able to call anybody up because of the COVID situation right now with the Wolfpack. So Lundqvist is getting his extended opportunity. I think the Rangers are doing right by him as far as being patient. But you do have to wonder at a certain point, especially if some of those prospects like Jones and Schneider, who you mentioned, Max, continue to play well. And if you look at what those guys are doing, Jones, I mean, plus minus, I don't think is really very relevant here. But Jones, as far as his point production, he's been on fire lately. He's got at least 1 point in 7 of his last 8 games. He leads all Hartford defensemen right now with 13 points. So early on in the season, he wasn't scoring a lot of points. But what you've seen in the last couple weeks is he's really picked things up. He really seems to be comfortable. You guys heard from Alex Thomas, who's the play-by-play guy for Hartford a couple weeks ago on the show. And he told you that Jones is starting to do things with the puck where you're seeing why he is considered a high-end prospect, why the Rangers are so high on him. So Jones is playing well. But on the other hand, I mentioned to you guys that I've been hearing good things about Schneider as well. The Rangers are really happy with him as far as his defensive play and his physicality and his grit and all those reasons that we heard when the Rangers drafted him in 2020. They traded up with their second first-round pick to go get him. And he also has 7 assists, so he's contributing on that end of the ice as well. So those are clearly the Rangers' top 2 defensive prospects right now. Jones, we saw at the end of camp, lasted a little bit longer and was a little bit higher in the pecking order than Schneider. But to me, they're kind of neck and neck. I think Jones had an advantage early on because he's a year older. He did get some NHL games last year, so he's a little more experienced at this point than Schneider. But I also think that the Rangers might feel more comfortable with Schneider if they were looking for a guy who they could trust defensively. Schneider's game is better than Jones on that end, whereas Jones has more offensive skills. So it really depends what you're looking for if you're going to call one of those guys up. I think Lundqvist and his situation right now, it could be a while before the Rangers start to consider alternatives, in part because of the COVID stuff that we touched on, but in part because I think that they came into this year with a strong feeling that Lundqvist was the most advanced, that he was the most NHL-ready of their defenseman prospects, and they want to give him a chance to ride it out. If we're sitting here in another month or so and we feel like he's struggling, then maybe they start to look to the alternative. I do think that there is a chance that they could swap either Jones or Schneider in there instead of Lundqvist. I do not think Nemeth would be the guy to come out of the lineup, but they haven't reached that point yet, clearly, and you're going to wait and see. Is this patience going to pay off? Will Lundqvist eventually come around and start performing like the player that they feel that he's capable of being? Or does there come a point where you say, you know what, Zach Jones or Braden Schneider is tearing it up in the AHL right now, and we want to give them a look? I think it's possible at some point, but as I wrote today, they haven't reached that point yet. And Lundqvist, even though we've seen some games where he's been scratched and we've seen some games where his ice time has been kind of low, the Rangers are still trying to ease him in and let him learn on the fly at the NHL level. All right. Next question comes from @InTheShift. Who wrote, here's my question submission. I know COVID changed the dynamic of your interaction with the players last year, but do you see anything new/special about how this year's team is gelling on a personal level? This team seems tighter, more all in, so to speak. Well, I can tell you that I definitely get the sense that this team is very tight. And you touched on a little bit about my experiences with the players last year versus this year. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I know I get questions about that sometimes, and you guys seem to be interested in, you know, behind the scenes, what's it look like from the reporter standpoint this season. Last year, as you guys know, everything was Zoom, didn't see anything in person beyond going to home games, didn't travel with the team, just went to games at MSG, never got anywhere close to the players. And the Zoom stuff, quite frankly, while it was certainly better than nothing, it was pretty lame. It was really hard to have conversation in that way. You'd ask a question and immediately get muted. You couldn't follow up on anything. There was no personal touch to it. The players, I don't think, even saw our faces. So it sucked in a lot of ways from that standpoint. So I'm grateful this year that we're back to seeing the players in person, being at the practice facility every day. The interviews, the way that it's working now, it's not what it was my first season on the beat where the locker room doors are open. You walked in there, you talked to whoever you want. That was a great way to get to know players, not just on the ice stuff, but off the ice stuff, talking about guys' families, getting to know each other a little bit, building relationships that way. I definitely miss that. To me, that's the best way to do it. And that's the best way to ensure that each reporter has a chance to sort of do their own thing and produce their own unique stories. And if you have something you want to talk about, you can go have a one-on-one conversation with a guy in one corner of the room while someone else talks to somebody else in another corner of the room. You're just bouncing from locker to locker and getting a feel for things that way. So that is absolutely the best way to cover a team, in my opinion. But what we're doing now is certainly better. Now we're back to seeing each other's faces. We're back to having a little banter. We're back to being able to talk and have follow-ups and actually have conversations as opposed to just a computer screen spitting a question at you, you answering it, and then on to the next one. So for me, it's definitely been much more enjoyable. I'd like to think, and I would hope for the players, it's been much more enjoyable, and we're sort of taking steps in the right direction. And you guys have even seen it. I know some of you that follow me on Twitter, you see, you know, I'm tweeting out little tidbits, whether it's a funny interaction with a guy or a comment that gets a laugh or some emotion that I pick up on, you know, all these different things that when you're talking to somebody in person, you have the ability to do versus the Zoom conversation. So much better from that standpoint. And with that being said, as far as your question, the team gelling. See, I've always had the sense that the team was pretty close, but I think each year it gets taken to the next level. And I've talked about this before, how the core of this team, when I first came on the beat 3 seasons ago, it was still forming. You had a general idea of who was going to be there, and obviously they had just signed Panarin to that big contract. But there was question marks. You knew Mika Zibanejad was going to need a new contract at some point. You weren't sure if he was for sure going to stick around. You weren't sure if Chris Kreider was going to stick around because at that point he still needed a new contract. Adam Fox was a rookie. You had no idea what you were going to get out of him. Ryan Lindgren was in the AHL to begin that season, as was Philip Hedl. Alexi Lafreniere wasn't there yet. Kaapo Kakko was a fresh-faced 18-year-old rookie. Igor Shesterkin was in the AHL. So you just go on down the line. All these guys that now we look at as core members of this team and you have a pretty strong inclination are going to be around for a while. Now we've reached that point, and these guys have been able to spend the last 3 years or whatever it is getting to know each other, building those relationships. So absolutely, the team is the most tight-knit that I've seen so far in my time on the beat. And of course, what helps guys feel good about themselves and have fun more than anything, that's winning. So you've got a 13-4-3 team right now. They're having a lot of fun on the ice. I was tweeting about this the other day. You've got Philip Hedl punting pucks. You've got guys sliding on the ice and doing snow angels. You've got Ryan Strome making everybody laugh. You've got all these different personalities. And they have added personalities. Like you look at bringing in a guy like Ryan Reeves. You look at the leadership of a guy like Barclay Gaudreau and the championship experience. Ryan Strome is a guy who's always making everybody laugh. Alexi Lafreniere is beloved in the room. Those guys, especially you could see it in that Islander game when he threw some big hits. And then he went after Jean-Gabriel Pageau and the way that his teammates reacted to that. There is definitely a good feeling around this team right now that I think is in large part because they've gotten to know each other a lot in the last few years. And this core has been established. But of course, a lot of it has to do with winning. If they weren't winning, you might not feel those good vibes quite as much. But right now, the vibes are great in that building, and the guys really do seem to enjoy being around each other. All right. Final question for this week's show comes from at Hedley Lamar, who wrote, any chance JT Miller comes back to New York, or is there possible bad blood? So I wanted to address this one. We talked last week after I wrote that story where I did a little research on what the Rangers' plans might be, looking at trades and how they're going to navigate the trade deadline. So we've touched on the fact that I do believe they are going to be buyers. I do believe that they intend to add a forward, whether it be a center or a right winger, who will help them in this playoff push. And the longer that they keep winning and staying in this playoff race, the more the chances increase of them being aggressive and doing something along those lines before the March 21st trade deadline. And the cap space is obviously a big thing here too, because the Rangers, as far as this season is concerned and a one-year rental is concerned, which is probably the route they're going to go, they have unlimited money to spend, really. Especially the longer they wait, the more they accrue cap space, and they can pretty much take on any contract they want as long as it expires at the end of this year. Where it gets tricky is if you're looking into a guy who's under contract beyond this year. Because as you guys know, as I've laid out in several stories and talked about on this podcast, when you look ahead to next season, the 22-23 season, the cap space really gets tight. Especially now that they've re-signed Fox and Zibanejad to long-term contracts, the purse strings are really going to have to tighten up for a couple years. And they also have to re-sign Kaapo Kakko. They've got some decisions to make at center with Ryan Strome on an expiring contract. And so I think they'd be more hard-pressed. It would be more difficult for them to pull off a trade that brings in a guy who's also under contract for next season because of all those factors. Now, if you do bring in somebody for next season, which is a possibility, I definitely have talked to people about that as a possibility versus the one-year rental thing. But there are stipulations. If you're going to do that, it can't be a big, big money deal. And it has to be a guy who you feel is really going to fit a need for you next season, because, again, they're not going to have a lot of flexibility. So they're not going to go out and get somebody who they don't see as a piece for them beyond this season, which brings us to JT Miller. Miller is one of those guys who you're starting to see rumored about a lot now, and that is because the Rangers, beyond re-signing to Kaapo Kakko, which is one of their top priorities for the offseason, need to decide what they're going to do for their second-line center. That's pretty much where all their free money is going to go to. Kakko, Sammy Blais is also a guy that needs a new contract, but he should come relatively cheap, and second-line center, because Strome's contract is expiring. So that's where some people are starting to point to Miller. Miller has 2 years left, this season and next season, at a $5.25 million cap hit. For a second-line center, that is a pretty fair, reasonable price to pay. That is probably around what the Rangers would have to spend to re-sign Strome. So in my mind, if you're going to talk about acquiring Miller, you have to weigh, would you rather have Miller as your second-line center, or would you rather have Strome as your second-line center? So let's look at some of this stuff here. Miller, point-wise, slightly ahead of Strome as far as production, but it's not that much of a difference. If you look at this season, he's got 20 points through 23 games. Strome, on the other hand, has 14 points through 16 games. So that's right around the same pace, right? Last two seasons, Strome maybe slightly behind Miller, but their point production is very similar. If you were going to rate it on a scale of 100, you would say 51% Miller, 49% Strome. They're both very productive offensive players. Defensively, if you look at those metrics, on the other hand, and you know, Strome's a guy I obviously watch play all the time. I wouldn't say he's a defensive stalwart by any stretch, but Miller, I haven't watched him regularly in years since he was with the Rangers previously, so it's hard for me to judge him beyond being able to look at these metrics. His defensive metrics are not great. Strome's rate out much better than his, so it looks like Strome is a superior defensive player. You know he can kill some penalties for you. Again, I wouldn't rate him as a high-end defensive player, but I also think that he's been a little underrated in that area, and his defensive metrics are actually pretty good. Faceoffs are an area where you're definitely going to give Miller the advantage. He's up around 56%, I believe, and I know Strome is under 50. So Strome has not been a really strong faceoff guy for the Rangers in his time here. And if you're putting a lot of stock in faceoffs, which is debatable, I tweeted about this when we were on Long Island for that Islanders game. The Rangers have been getting crushed on faceoffs in a lot of these games and still winning. And I asked Gerard Gallant what his feeling on that was. And he was like, listen, to me, it's something obviously we need to improve on and we'd like to improve on. But us losing faceoffs isn't necessarily correlating with us losing games. I think of it like lacrosse. Some of you guys know that I played lacrosse. In lacrosse, if you lose a faceoff, you're not going to have possession of the ball probably for a while. It's much more difficult to create turnovers in a sport like lacrosse. Hockey, on the other hand, the puck is constantly changing hands. Possessions, of course, if you get pinned in your defensive zone for a while because you lose a D-zone faceoff, that's a bad look. And Gallant said that that's his biggest concern, is losing key faceoffs in the defensive zone. But generally speaking, the puck changes hands much more often in a sport like hockey, so you can overcome it. Of course, you want to get better on faceoffs, and the Rangers should certainly strive to get better on faceoffs. But that has not been the difference between winning and losing the vast majority of the time for them. It's been something that they've been able to overcome. Again, Miller clearly better on faceoffs. That would be the one category where you would probably say definitively he would be an improvement over Strome. The rest of the stuff, like I said, points is sort of a toss-up. Maybe you prefer Miller a little bit, and defensively, Strome looks like the better player. So I don't know that I see him as a clear upgrade. It's a conversation worth having, no doubt about it. But Strome is a guy that you know that he has this chemistry with Artemi Panarin, which cannot be dismissed. I know people have tried to dismiss that in the last few years, but you cannot dismiss it anymore. There's no doubt in my mind from talking to people and talking to Panarin himself that he really enjoys playing with Strome. And I've mentioned to you guys, based on the previous question, and I know plenty of other times, that Strome is really a glue guy in that locker room. He is a favorite. Ryan Lindgren, you heard on this show, say he's the funniest guy in the locker room. He's a leader on the locker room. I know he takes a lot of the young guys under his wing. So do you want to disrupt that to go after a guy who might be a slight upgrade, but maybe isn't even an upgrade as far as I'm concerned? I don't know. Again, it's a conversation worth having. I think that there are a variety of center-type players that the Rangers are going to look at in the trade market this season and then maybe as free agents next season, because I don't see them re-signing Strome during the year. I think they're going to wait till the summer to weigh all of their options. And you guys know that I've talked before about Tomas Hertl as a guy who, if they could acquire him in a trade, if San Jose did make him available, that I do see him as an upgrade. But he's also going to be more expensive because he's a guy that needs a new contract come this summer. So to me, whereas if you asked me about whether I thought Strome would be here long term a year ago, my answer would have been no. We know that they've looked into trading him in the past. And we know that they waited until the last minute to give him a qualifying offer two off seasons ago. But his value just keeps showing up. He's been consistent as far as his point production, his on-ice play, and he's really become one of the guys that I think a lot of the players on this team appreciate in the locker room. So to me, he's been a bona fide number two center for the Rangers for three straight years now. It's hard to argue with the results, and I'm reaching the point where I would not be surprised if Strome ends up sticking around. I can't believe I'm saying that, but that's how I believe at this point. We'll see how the rest of the season goes, but I would not be shocked to see Ryan Strome stick around, and I think that any decision the Rangers make at center, whether it's a trade or a free agent this summer, they're going to be weighing Strome versus player X. So maybe Miller's a guy that enters in that conversation, especially if Vancouver keeps losing and they end up deciding to sell off some pieces. I think targeting Vancouver as a team you can make a trade with is probably in line with reality, but I'm not sure if I see Miller as an upgrade over Strome. I think it's an interesting debate to have, but right now I'm not sure that I see it as a definite yes. So That's my long-winded answer to your question there, Headley. I hope it maybe shed some light on my line of thinking and the Rangers' line of thinking, because as you guys know, monitoring this stuff and the trade possibilities is something that I've been inquiring about in the last couple of weeks. But we've got a long way to go. Deadline isn't until March 21st. So a little patience here, because as I told you guys last week, I don't sense the Rangers are in a big rush to do something right away. I think they're going to let things develop and play out and then make a more informed decision in another month, 2 months, maybe 3 months. So that'll do it for this week's show. We're going to put it to a close. Thanks to Will Cooley for taking the time to come on the show. Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to get back to you guys. I'll say something on Twitter about the plans for next week. I'm in a little bit of a tough spot because we usually have these episodes come out on Thursday. The last couple of weeks, we've moved it up to Wednesday because of the schedule. But next week, the Rangers have a game in Chicago on Tuesday. I'm going to be traveling for that. Have to take a flight back to New York Wednesday morning and then rush to get ready and drop off all my stuff and then get to the Garden because the Rangers are playing back-to-backs. So I'm not sure what's going to be the best window for me to fit the podcast. And maybe we push it till Friday. Maybe we hold off a week. I'm going to talk to my editor about it and make a final decision. So I will let you guys know once I have more information. But just FYI, the plans for next week's podcast are a little bit up in the air, and we'll keep you posted on that. But for now, I hope you all have a great week. I hope you enjoy your weekend, and I will talk to you next week.